Hi, you're listening to One Way Single Parent Family Favourites on Resonance 104.4 FM. Maybe you're listening to this on the radio, or maybe you're listening to it on the internet. Maybe you're in a foreign country. We don't know. There's no way of telling. Anyway, I'm Stuart Lee, and I always used to say I'm sitting in for Billy Jenkins, but let's face it, he hasn't done the show for a long time. In fact, there are rumours that he's given up on it, and that the four-way cover rotor, that's what it's going to be now. Me, Pete Sargent, the other people. Today, I'm going to be joined by Rick Bland. He's from Canada. And Gary Lestrange, and then the comedian Lucy Porter will be in the last half hour. It's Billy Jenkins' birthday today. He's not here though, like I said, but as a tribute to him for getting this show going, we're going to play him a song which he probably wouldn't like, but it does include the word birthday in the title. In fact, the title is Birthday. This is the Icelandic version of Birthday by the Sugar Cubes.
Thank you. I've seen that road before. It'll always lead me here, lead me to your door. The wild and windy night that the rain
That was Joy Jackson, a Canadian child from 1976, singing The Long and Winding Road from the album The Langley Schools Music Project, which was a load of records of kids from the Langley district of British Columbia singing songs under the guidance of their hippie music teacher. I played that record by a Canadian child. These shows aren't just thrown together. I've played that because we're joined by a Canadian man, Rick Bland, who's doing a show about a Canadian child. Do you want to tell us about that, Rick?
Yes. Hi, Stu. I'm doing a show in Edinburgh called Thick, about a very lovely Canadian boy who's been dropped on his head as a baby and has this amazing knack of turning everything awful in his life into something really positive.
I saw a preview of it, and it did have a very positive feel to it, even though it was essentially quite bleak and despairing and sick. But that's because you give off a positive vibe, don't you?
Look, I do,
you
indeed.
Now. You glow.
I'm very positive. I'm a light bulb. But Canada is a twisted place. It seems really, really fantastic and nice and clean and everything. But behind closed doors, lots of sick and twisted things happen. And something really bizarre happened when I was a kid that sort of inspired this. The thing that is revealed at the end of the play is something that the woman that used to drive me to swim practice actually did. So
you don't want to say what that is?
No, I actually don't want to say it, because no one would ever believe it was a comedy, because it actually is a black comedy. But the thing that happens is absolutely horrible.
Is the woman that drove you to swim park likely to see the show?
No, I think she's still in jail.
Does that worry you that it's about a real thing?
No, because well, it happened quite a few years ago, and it made me basically the thing that really inspired me about it was that this woman who did something really terrible was still a really nice human being, and the papers painted her as a monster. What she did is unforgivable.
But I'm just going to interrupt you for a sec, just to tell the listeners that that noise you can hear, that's the restaurant next door to us here at 9 Denmark Street, where they're either banging something into a wall or killing rats. We don't know. It's not going to go away. And that's the virtue of this community radio station. When anything can happen. Yeah, just that thing you're saying about like real stuff, though. The first like kind of paid writing job I ever got for text things, I got asked to write a thing for Vox magazine, which was a music magazine, which has since closed, about record collectors, right? So I just wrote this thing about this bloke that I'd met on a bus coming from a Sonic Youth gig in London back to Oxford where I was a student. And he just talked in incredible detail about the different, all the different gigs he'd bootlegged,
right,
and what equipment he'd used to tape them, and how his favourite group was a 80s British experimental group called Camberwell Now, which actually Resonance FM listeners probably know, featured a lot of former members of This Heat. But anyway, he just kept going on and on about it, and then I saw him at a gig where he was taping things again. He'd hidden all mics around the room, and he was just kind of incredibly detailed, borderline autistic man, you know. And anyway, so I wrote this piece about him without really thinking that he or people that he, you know, might read it, even though it's going in a national magazine. Then I got all death threats and stuff saying, how dare you pick on Steve, he's a harmless, eccentric man. And I felt really ashamed of myself and that I'd overstepped the mark. And since then, I've always tried to avoid recognizably real people, because it just seems to open a terrible can of worms. I'm just giving you that warning now.
Okay, well, the good thing is this woman is in jail, probably, and she is in...
Doesn't that make you more frightened? She's
no.
In jail. She's already committed enough of a crime to go to jail.
I feel safe, because I think that she's also sort of been sectioned off, so I think she'll be away for a long time. And she's from Tecumseh, Ontario, and I think the chances of anything happening in London filtering its way to Tecumseh, Ontario are virtually impossible. Possible.
Where are you from?
I'm from Tecumseh.
You filtered your way through. You're happening here now.
I know, but I'm not in jail.
Do you think that she might know someone who's getting out, though, and they could, like, suppose someone was in jail with her, and they ended up at the Canadian Embassy at Canada House on 23rd of July, seeing a preview of the show, or in the Edinburgh Festival, and they went to her, you know, there's like a show based on your crime happening now. It's going, and then she would know other criminals that were coming out, and she could get them to get you.
Well, you know what? If Edinburgh really bombs, then I wouldn't mind being killed anyways, because my life would be destroyed.
Well, you know, I'm going to just say like a radio thing now. We don't need to be put off by it. So anyway, we're going to talk to Rick Moore about Thick after this piece. I brought in some music written or performed in the persona of Disturbed Children today. This is the, to help you set the mood, this is from the 80s American hardcore duo Happy Flowers, who wrote and performed as if they were insane children. And this is from the album Oof, and it's called Stop Touching My Food.
in my class call me Rudolph the Red-Haired Moron. I love when they chant that at recess because my name is Rudolph, and my favorite thing about Christmas is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and his bright red nose. For a long time, people were scared of Rudolph because he was different. But one Christmas Eve, Santa needed him because his difference lit up the dark and stormy world, and he saved the day, and they weren't scared of him anymore.
That's Warren Zevon, Excitable Boy, from a compilation of Warren Zevon's greatest hits, which didn't really have any. But and he's got a new album coming out soon, which tragically will be his last, as he's dying from cancer. And the and part of the advanced publicity is, Warren, it seems really sick, it says, prepare for Warren Zevon's last album. I thought, God, you know, give the bloke a chance, he might go into remission. But anyway, so, that's about a mad kid as well. Because Rick Bland's here, who's in a show about a mad kid, and he just read a bit out of it there, and it was really slick, that. It was like being on that programme on Radio 4, what is it? Four, when they, you know, when they go and review things. What's it called? That.
Radio 4 Review.
No, it's called Front Row.
Yeah.
It was like something from Front Row, except they would know what their own show was called.
Yeah, they'd have a very good idea.
Oh, this show's called One Way Single Parent Family Favourites, and you're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. And I'm with Rick Bland, who's doing Thick, a show called Thick, which is at the Edinburgh Festival at Jongleurs 2, Greenside Place, Leith Street, from the 4th to the 25th, but not the 12th, at 4 o'clock in August. And also at Canada House on the 23rd of July. Now, I saw you do a run of Thick, kind of demo of it, at Canada House. They're good at promoting their...
they're fantastic.
Because I saw Corb Lund, the Canadian country and western singer, there as well.
They do. I get invitations every week. There's a lot of culture in Canada. I know it's shocking to believe, shocking to hear.
But presumably, you know, actually, Joe, you know, my girlfriend, she was telling me that the British, someone from Canada Arts had got in touch with her, and she'd said, that they should see you and
stuff. Oh, good.
Yeah, I don't know what, which is probably to send you back there and make you tour it and go, look what you can achieve if you leave.
It's a nightmare. Touring in a van in Ontario, it's about 20 times the size of England, and you literally have 15-hour drives. You just want to kill yourself doing kids shows in gyms to people that have never heard of the word theater before and want to throw things at you. It's hell. That's why I moved here.
And that's, then you went into Regis Shakespeare Company.
Which is just as humiliating and awful. My entire career has been a complete humiliation.
Was there something specific about Ontario that informed the character of Rudolph in, apart from the fact that, you know, it was based on your life and this incident with this woman, but is there an Ontario-ness about it?
Is there? God. I guess there's something Canadian about it, I think, because there's that element of everything being really nice, which is actually a bit British, but really people are being really nice to you, but they're stabbing you in the back. So it's sort of that really weird underlying niceness with a smile, but daggers in your eyes sort of thing that Canadians have.
I always found Canada... I've been there a few... I thought it was nice, really.
Well, it is quite nice. It's a bit too clean, though. When I first moved here, I thought this was a dirty scum hole, London. And then I went back to Canada, and everything was so clean and shiny. I actually wanted to litter and make it look lived in, because it doesn't look like people live there.
Yeah, I know what you mean about that. You can't get that feeling. I went to Vancouver, and that's really got that kind of feel to it, where you feel a bit frightened.
Yeah. All the marble shines, and there's marble everywhere in buildings, this green, veiny marble, and it's all shined and polished, and it's just, I just like a bit of dirt in my life.
Actually, one bit of Vancouver that I found I really liked was this downtown bar near the Gas Town or something, anyway, down that way. I went in there all the time, and then people were telling me, oh, that's like where heroin addicts go. You mustn't go there. And it just seemed like London. It seemed like all of London.
The cleanest place in the world, really. Heroin addicts, don't go there. You get a sterilized needle.
Do you want to do another bit of thick?
Yeah.
Maybe that banging will stop.
Maybe. It's actually me banging my head against the wall.
Actually, what will happen is you'll play this back, you'll get a tape of this, you'll play it back, and you'll realise what the show needs is a constant sound of banging.
You're going to have someone off stage to hire someone just to bang through the whole show. Well, read this little, it's a little section. Like, basically, the mother in the story is a Catholic, and when the father dies, she sort of loses God for a while.
Shut the door.
Okay, good. Oh my God! It's like the cone of silence. So, anyways, this Catholic. Once the father dies, she loses God for a while, and then she becomes reborn. So she tells my character, "I've been reborn. She's found God." So for me, she's found God, but no one seems to know that God was lost. So I have to explain to my class how God was lost, so that people will understand the importance of my mother finding God. If anyone is still with me, I will. So basically, I do the show and tell, and then the teacher screams at me at the end of it, "Sit down!" And so then I say. The more I talked, the more they laughed. The more they laughed, the better I felt. My class started to play tag with me every recess, and when they tagged me with their fist or their foot, they'd chant, "You gave me cooties! You're gross! You're gross! You're gross!" I love being called gross. Mama said gross meant big, and God is big, so I'm big and gross like God.
This is the White Stripes, which Rick wanted us to play. This is from a bootleg. We don't care about that on Resonance FM. What are they going to do? Seize our assets? This is a version of Jolene.
Calls your name, Jolene.
That's Paul Wibier, and it's called Satan Theme. And it's from some biker film from the 60s. I don't know which one. And it's part of the Disturbed Child sequence of music we're playing today. It's actually from a really good album called Angel Dust, Music for Movie Bikers. And by a strange coincidence, the sleeve art for it is done by Edwin Pouncey, who presents a show on this very station, Resonance 104.4 FM. Let's have a look at what's coming up today on Resonance 104.4 FM. Well, later on, there's calling all pensioners after this at 2 o'clock for old people with that bloke, Harry Howard. He used to be a train robber or something. Anyway, some kind of criminal, and he's in trouble with the other pensioners. The official pensioners' representative body are annoyed with him because they say that he's saying things that they don't think are really true of pensioners. But so that's, if you want to hear pensioner-based controversy, that's from 2 till 3 here on Resonance 104.4 FM, calling all pensioners. Then at 3 o'clock, Richard Sanderson's wide-ranging cultural chat. Baggage Reclaim. Mr. John, that's the bloke from the London Electric Guitar Orchestra, is on at 5 doing Go for Kids, which is really great. And then tomorrow I'm going to... Oh, look, there's something on tonight at midnight called Crossing Canada, Rick. it's by Murray Schafer, and it says, in 1973, the World Soundscape Project, set up by R. Murray Shakespeare at the Simon Fraser University, I've been there actually, it's got a good Native American gallery in Vancouver, undertook a series of 10 radio programs broadcast by the CBC, covering different aspects and approaches to the Canadian soundscape.
Wow, I did a weird show of his back in 1908. Yeah, this a thing called Patria, and I played some weird character called Nelson Nepomuk. I don't know. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
When you were in it.
Yeah, it made Jerry Springer the Opera seem mainstream and commercial.
Right. Okay, well,
which it actually is.
Now, yeah. Yeah, don't talk to me about that. I don't know if he's actually here, if you want to come and see him. I suspect he's probably made a soundscape package and sent it in. I don't think he'll be here. I don't think R. Murray Schafer will be here making a soundscape. That would be ridiculous.
It would be really ridiculous.
Anyway, that's what a weird coincidence that you would know him. Yeah. Imagine, it's a small, it's not many people.
Didn't know him well, because, you know, there was a lot of us in it, but it was at the Canadian Opera Company. It was just it was the dumbest thing I've ever done, actually. I'm not really selling him very well, but he's really good.
Oh, well, tomorrow at midday, there's a thing about new art on Mondays at midday presented by Cecilia Wee, W-E-E, I love her name. And then my friend Simon Munnery is on at 3:30 with his show, Simon Munnery's Experimental Half Hour, which of course lasts for an hour, hence the, it's called An Experiment in Time Expansion. And that's on at 3:30 tomorrow. But anyway, here, we've got Gary Lestrange coming on in a bit, who's kind of a musician, and Lucy Porter, the comedian's on later. But I'm still here with Rick Bland, who's got this new show about a crazy Canadian kid that he's doing called Thick. I had a thing when it... Oh, yeah, I'm just going to say when it's on again. You can see a sort of version of it not finished at the at Canada House on the 23rd of July at about 6:30. But if you ring them up near the time,
yeah,
they'd know, wouldn't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. And there happening. Is a website, actually, that will be built this week called www.thicktheplay.co.uk.
Right.
So you can go there for information as of Wednesday.
And also, after then, it will be... after then, it will be in at Jongleurs 2, in the Edinburgh Festival, throughout the first four weeks of August at 4 o'clock. And I mean, this is a sort of new thing for you, isn't it, doing that, this is writing your own, I mean, it's not like a one-man show, but it's very much built around you as a vehicle,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
What are you hoping to do with that?
Well, right now it looks like there's a tour that's being organized for the spring, and eventually, who knows, like there's a couple people that wanted to turn it into a film after that reading, but I just thought I would like to just sit for a while on it and do it as a play and... sort of see how it goes. I think it's good to get something out in front of an audience for a while and sort of see if it actually lives or if it does the big fat die.
I think it will live.
Yeah.
It will live. And it's a really good picture, that, as well. There's a very dramatic image of Rick standing in a yellow field holding some flowers. What about, has anyone said to you, that's sick, how dare you do it? Because, I mean, I thought it was really funny, but it's what we call edgy. It's like edgy, man.
It's edgy, man. But, see, it's one of those things, if I had written this in Canada, it would have never actually started. I would never followed through. But I did appear, the very first section of it...
You make Canada sound like a fascist state.
But according to Madonna, it was. Toronto was a fascist city at one point, because they wouldn't let her take something off on stage at one point. Yeah. She did call it... But anyways, it is quite... I actually work for the Toronto Tourist Board. I did a section of it years ago in the very first, there were four sections because it's morphed a lot, but when I did it, this woman, this really open theater practitioner the next day in rehearsal was saying, that Rick Bland's the kind of guy that go to the top of the CN Tower and shoot people. So I decided not to do it for about eight. I just sort of put it aside, and then I picked it up and thought about 2000 and thought, oh, this is quite interesting still. So I then it sort of developed it into something different.
Yeah, I mean, what will happen is, you know, you'll go back now and everyone will go, it's marvellous. But yesterday's outrage is tomorrow's mainstream entertainment.
Well, exactly. You're a living proof of that, mister.
Rick's mentioned that I'm involved with this opera, Jerry Springer, the opera, in which he played Jerry Springer for a long time through all the development process. But now, I'm terrified about it at the moment, because there's all this stuff about what it will cost to do it as a mainstream thing in a West End venue.
And it's massive, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
just loads of people in it. There's 33 people in it. You've got three, haven't you?
Yeah, three.
Yeah, well, that's why you won't.
Just get people playing all sorts of characters.
Yeah.
I play one because I'm lazy and make all my friends play lots of characters.
Are the people coming over especially from Canada?
There's a girl from Toronto, but she lives in Los Angeles, who's flying over.
Is she the one who did it before?
No, it's another girl from Second. She's done Second City and all that sort of
stuff.
Not
that tall one with long hair.
No.
She is nice.
Yeah.
What about what? Are you saying that will they be in trouble though? Because you're making it sound like you're fighting some kind of rear guard action from abroad against what you believe is some kind of Canadian fear of your outrageous antics. Do you think that will they be welcomed on their return, or will they be tainted by association with Thick?
I don't think anyone will even know that it happened over in Canada, frankly. Or else they'll go back to huge ticker tape parades. One or the other. There's no medium part. It's just one extreme or the other. They'll either be assassinated by the madwoman in prison or by one of her friends, as you were talking about earlier.
My happiest Canada experience was I was driving through the Rockies, and it was somewhere called Prince George.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I ended up there, and there was a hockey final on between. It was the final of the hockey. Ice hockey,
right.
Between the Vancouver team and a team from America,
right?
And we didn't know what it was, and there were loads of people in this bar all going mad, and they thought it was really funny that me and my girlfriend didn't know what hockey was, and they kind of took us under their wings and explained to us the rules, and we all joined in singing this tragically hip song, the Canadian REM that keep getting played all through whenever anyone scores and whatever. But there was also this kind of edge of, like, we were losers because we were English and we didn't understand how great. And also, this is what proper sport was, and that it wasn't like England. There wouldn't be football hooliganism violence afterwards because we weren't those kind of people. This is a nice country. We know what happened. Vancouver lost, and then the next thing it cut to was footage of live news from Vancouver of the town being smashed to bits by rioting hockey fans.
Oh, when I was in, I remember...
94, that was.
Yeah, in 83, a Toronto team, football team, the Toronto Argonauts won against a Vancouver team, and they all poured into town and literally, I don't understand it, they just literally go down the street and smash all the windows. I sort of was nice because it made Toronto a bit dirty for a while. But then they got the sweepers in and cleaned it up, and it started to sparkle again.
Oh, let's do the last plug for Thick, and then we move on. Rick's going to stay, and are you going to stay?
I'm going to stay for a bit. I'm going to.
All right, okay. Yeah. He's going to stay for a bit.
And then we're going to, like, slip out.
And slip out.
When the banging stops.
Right. So Thick, a black comedy by Rick Bland, will probably be on at Canada House on the 23rd of July in the evening after 6:30. But it's also on in Edinburgh. At the Edinburgh Festival, Fringe Festival, at Jongleurs 2, Leith Street, from the 1st to the 25th at 4 o'clock. Thanks for coming. I'm going to leave you with another... I'm going to say goodbye to Rick's official section of the show by playing another piece of Canadian music. This is from a band from the 60s. You ever hear The Collectors?
Nope.
Well, I think they became the Guess Who.
Oh!
Yeah, a bit later on.
I heard of them.
Anyway, this is a sort of pretentious psychedelic song about a child with superpowers. Called Howard Chrisman's Older.
Once in every 100 years they appear. Why they come and where they're from isn't clear. But they're here for a while. was reading and writing before he was three. By the time he was nine, he'd earned a degree. And at the age of 13, he discovered a way he could change the molecular structure of clay. He could change it from clay into silver or gold. Don't forget he was yet only 13 years old. On the day of his 17th birthday, he made a machine that would show every bill marked as paid. That led to a way of reviving a man who was dead. He couldn't understand all the people making such a fuss about what he considered such a useless thing. Everyone says he's a genius. Now what I'm going to say should stay between us. 'Cause Howard Chrisman's older, and lately I've noticed that he's starting to slow.
This is Resonance 104.4 FM. Listen to New Art on Mondays, a week on Monday, from 12 noon to 1:30 p.m. Presented by me, Cecilia Wee, with live interviews and debate on the latest events in international new music, visual arts, film and dance.
That was Japan. Japan from the early 80s, Quiet Life. David Sylvian's disowned the entire catalogue of Japan now, apart from the last single, Ghosts, which he likes. He's got a new album out where he's playing with Resonance FM favourites like Derek Bailey doing mad free improvisation, which I suspect doesn't sound very much like that Quiet Life by Japan. But the reason I played that is not because... actually, I do like it. I was about to try and be cool and go, not because I like it. I don't like that. I like Blind Lemon Jefferson and John Zorn, I was going to say. But no, actually, it's all right. But we came out of it early because we felt like time was passing. And, you know, well, anyway, right. I'm joined by Gary Lestrange. Gary, I've got your album. It's fantastic. How would you describe yourself? And why have you chosen to revive that? I mean, the music's very much in that vein. Why have you chosen to return to that style?
Well, I wouldn't see it so much as returning to any particular style. I mean, obviously, I'm influenced by the New Romantics to a certain extent, but I'm also influenced by other things like, Dick Turpin and Fritz Lang, Bertolt Brecht, and lots of other stuff like Office Furniture, and The Colour Grey.
But on the album,
yeah,
what you mainly hear is a New Romantic influence.
Right, okay, well, that wasn't necessarily deliberate.
Right.
What I'm thinking of is more that I've come up with something that I think of as neo-Regency Face Warrior music, which is a sort of forward-looking hybrid of punk and disco with a touch of glam, but you only really see that in the unique stage costumes.
And when I hear that, I mean, I haven't listened to that kind of music for a long time. So
right.
Before you sent me the Polaroid Suitcase album.
No wonder, because it's new.
It is new, yeah. It's not the same as that. But there are things there that suggest there's a lot more to be got out of that style than was got out of it at the time, and you bringing something new to it.
Yeah, I suppose you could look at it that way, yes. I don't know. I mean, I don't really listen to a lot of modern music, you see. I'm not saying it's rubbish, but, well, it is.
I mean, is it okay if we play a track?
Yeah, of course, I'd love it, yeah.
I'm Japanese.
Oh, yeah, that's my favourite.
Well, I really like this, but it's written in the persona of a Japanese man, presumably.
Well, yeah, it's more about this feeling that I've had for a long time that, I've always been fascinated by Japan, and I don't believe in reincarnation, but I do think I was definitely a samurai in a past life. And this song is sort of partly my way of saying hello to my Japanese fans, but it's also my way of saying that deep down, just like them, I am actually Japanese.
Okay, this is Gary Lestrange. I'm Japanese.
Stepped off the central line. Whoa, oh, oh. I've only got 1,000 yen in my hand. That's only £5.29. Whoa, oh, oh. Dear mister, won't you help me out? I cannot find my way about. Give us a quid to buy some rice and stuff. Oh, I'm Japanese. Can you direct me to the station, please? Oh, I'm Japanese. Chinese, Japanese, monkey knees, what are these? Back in Japan, I got a bam, bangalow. China, I'm not sure. Oh, oh, oh.
like you turn Ellen vice versa. But that's just Lacey Stanley ridiculous. Oh, I'm Japanese. You say I'm not an owl flicker. Konnichiwa. Red circle on a big white cloth. Godzilla fights the giant moth. Kimono geishas do a dance. Fat bloke fighting in their underpants. I love the gleaming cities. Cartoon kitties with big titties. Why won't you accept I'm from Tokyo? It makes me pretty angry. I'm Japanese. I eat raw fish and I'm allergic to cheese. I'm Japanese. Hentai, samurai, shogunai, banzai. I'm Japanese. Even though I'm blind and I'm as tall as John Cleese. I'm Japanese.
Gary Lestrange and I'm Japanese, and Gary Lestrange is here. And I noticed you're doing this. You're doing a show,
yeah,
at the Edinburgh Festival.
Yeah, that's
at the
right.
Edinburgh Fringe Festival. I mean, that's predominantly associated with comedy and theatre, but you're taking this.
Yeah, well, I would say that even though I do perform music, I do think of myself more as a sort of artist. I've got a sort of arts background. I went to art college. And a lot of that creative training goes into everything I do, you know. So it's more a sort of, less a sort of pop gig. It's sort of half a pop gig, and then the other half is sort of like a kind of abstract, arty extravaganza.
Bowie did a tour like that, didn't he, where he did a lot of kind of theatre stuff in it. I don't think he went very well, but he did do one.
Well, I don't know if it's so much theatre as me talking.
Right.
I suppose that's theatre in a way.
It is. I mean, you know, theatre can be anything, can't it?
Yeah, it can. It can be just, you know, a man standing in a box. I've done that before and all.
Right.
And I think you probably have as well.
We've all gone on a long journey to be here today. Not literally. I've just come from Hackney, but, you know, sort of metaphorically.
Yeah, metaphorically speaking. Yeah.
So what's the form of the Gary Lestrange live show? Is it you get a bit of music?
Predominantly I perform six songs from my forthcoming album Polaroid Suitcase, which are wanted to be out in the shops by the end of July, but we've had a bit of a distribution problem, so I'll only be able to sell it after the show, which is unfortunate. But the rest of the show is me talking about my early punk days, and then I go on to talk about my failed relationships and the near-death experience which changed my life.
When you talk about your early punk days,
yeah. I mean,
you're not really early enough, you're not old enough to have been part of the punk.
Well, no, because obviously there are a lot of people who think that I was around in the 80s and stuff, but, just look at me, I'm not 52.
About 32 or something.
That's right, yeah. Mm. But what was the question again?
You were talking about your early punk days, I don't see...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, they was early to me.
And the next track I want to play is, I played the Newman one there.
Yeah.
Again, because it seems to have a similar sort of feel to Is My Toaster Sentient?
Oh, yeah, I suppose you're right. I never really thought about it.
And what's this? This appears to be about a fear of technology, or is it a celebration of technology?
Yeah, it's both, really. It's about the growing power of artificial intelligence, but it's also about what happens when you spend too much time in the house.
Okay. This is Gary Lestrange, and Is My Toaster Sentient?
Electric tubes and tarmac.
Is my toaster sentient?
If not, then why did he give Mr. Kettle a kiss?
Is my toaster sentient?
He likes silent films and his girlfriend's name is Kronos.
Oh, what's going on in this messed up world? There are loads of things I just don't understand. Like, what is love? What's the difference between boys and girls? What's that penis between my legs for? If I plug it in the wall, will it light up?
my toaster sentient? Is my blender mad? Is my telephone autistic? Is my car a genius? Is my bin a twat? Is my oven epileptic? Is my dad a photograph? Is my mum a spy? Is my granddad made of circuits? Is my face an alien? Is my arse a film? Are my elbows electronic?
So, do you want to come back to my place? We can look at my secret mucky Polaroids.
Just please don't tell my mum.
That's a little bit of Ultravox there from the album Raging Eden, I played that because we've got Gary Lestrange in, who's a musician who's kind of taking some.
I really like that one. I'm sorry, that was really moody.
Well, I'm going to read you some of the words because I think there's Raging Eden. We sit and watch these lifeless forms, stark and petrified, the high suspense of an empty stage, drawing in, clutching to its breast, with murmured words we sigh and focus on the main facade. And they were the new gods, and they shone on high. Their heavy perfume of the night sucked them down in the red tide. All is through the looking glass, focus on the main facade. Rage in Eden, jigsaw sequence, but no one could see the end. Disciples of the new way, portraits in the sand, see when they run their longest mile, holding caps in wet hands, eyes upon them, trying to focus on the main facade. Rage in Eden, beyond the hard, reluctant windows, news from magazines, we wrote their names on books we'd borrowed, as if to bring us closer still, and threw it all away to focus on the main facade. And there's there seems to be a European nostalgia for almost fascist kind of imagery in that. I'm not saying that you are, but there's some. I'm not saying you're a fascist or anything, but there's some kind of crossover with some of. What is it about this romantic notion of, say, white people in a wilderness holding caps in their hands in rain that is so, you know, you find that in a lot of this music. What do you think it's about?
Well, I don't know. I mean, just from my point of view, I would say that I always like to associate myself with the bad guy. I don't know why. I think it's probably because I was actually quite a quiet child. I don't know if that's true or not, because I can't actually remember. But I've forgotten the question again. What was it about?
There's this kind of edge of almost Nietzschean kind of Superman sort of thing about a lot of that.
Yeah.
Like Gary Newman and Ultravox kind of trench coat sort of thing. I'm not saying it's like the British movement or something, it isn't, but there's...
No, it's. I think it's more a sort of artistic statement, really, about, you know, searching for whatever it is, the white myth of the
Valhalla.
Man. Valhalla. Yeah, well, I don't know, that sounds a bit too Iron Maiden to me, but...
Well, Vienna, then.
Yeah, yeah, the mythical land of Vienna, yeah, in ancient times, yeah.
I won that.
I'd like to go there one day.
Well, I'm sure you'll be able to. I mean, I think it's just going to. I think it's going to go through the roof. But that Ultravox album, I didn't buy it. I won that as a child on Tiswas, which
is Chris Townsend.
Yeah, I've got the letter here.
Did you meet Lenny Henry?
No, I didn't get to go on. I got it.
Oh, right.
It says, "Dear Stuart, what you had to do was they showed the video of the Thin Wall, and you had to say what was going on in it in a funny way." And I did.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I won this.
My mum taped it on a Betamax video.
Dear Stuart, congratulations on being chosen as a winner in the Ultravox competition. As promised, enclosed is your prize of an Ultravox album, which we at Tiswas hope you will like. We do hope that you will continue to watch and enjoy the show, and don't forget to enter the competitions, as there are always lots of lovely prizes to be won. Tina Murray, Tiswas office. And that's been signed by Warren Kahn from Ultravox. Not Midgeor, anyone you've heard of.
But oh, no.
Warren Kahn. He was American, I think.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
He was the only American one in it.
What was he doing in Ultravox then?
Well, I don't know. He must have come over and probably met them in somewhere.
Yeah, so in a pub somewhere.
He'd probably got the right look. Long coat.
Yeah, well, he did look pretty striking. I've often thought I wished I looked like that.
Like Warren Kahn?
Yeah. But I'm quite pleased with my own face.
It's a good face. Well, what this is actually, you describe yourself as a face warrior.
Yeah,
what do those words mean together? Because in isolation, I know what a warrior is, I know what a face is. What's a false face warrior?
Well, it's like if you just had warrior on its own, I think that it would imply something to do with fighting, and I don't do that no more. But I do like to think of myself as a warrior of style, you know. I mean, what I usually say is that I'm proud to be a warlord, but fashion, not bombs, is my weapons. So it's more about the sort of, you know, the face thing, you know. I believe in painting my face in order to express my individual spirit properly.
On the picture of the album cover, on your face, there are the colours red, blue, silver and black.
Yeah.
Is that a maximum four colours?
No. I change the colours on my face, but usually the design is actually usually the same. I've got a, you know, if you look now, I've got the cross. That represents the masculine side, and then the little black dots that represents the feminine side of my face. Then the eyebrow represents fear and surprise in equal measure, and the lopsided smile represents power, gallantry, nobility, and kissing.
And are you getting to a stage now where this is it's a striking image, and there's a whole persona and in almost like a philosophy that comes with the character in the music. Are you getting to a stage where people are turning up at Gary Lestrange gigs looking like Gary Lestrange?
Well, I did a gig in an art gallery in London somewhere last night. There was a lot of people there dressed as pirates and dandies and robots and stuff. But I realised afterwards it was actually like an 80s night. Yeah, which was one reason I was probably booked. But, usually they come in jeans and T-shirts. They're too afraid of getting their heads kicked in. Which they shouldn't be, really, because, you know, they can take away our self-respect, but they can't take away our pride.
And are you looking forward to... Do you have an agenda, and is that agenda associated with flamboyance across the board?
Well, I want to be on top of the pubs, if that's what you mean.
Yeah.
But beyond that, you know, I want to enrich the culture of the UK in a way that I don't think it's being enriched at the moment. I don't know if I'm the right person to do that, but the very least I can do is actually put some makeup on and some clothes and sing.
When you at the start of the album, there's this whole thing about remembering the gods that you saw on Top of the Pops as a child.
Yeah.
Kind of like those Ultravox dudes.
I suppose that's going back to the mythical Vienna again, isn't it? Yeah.
And do you want to become a god like the gods of your memory from childhood?
That's a very interesting question that I've not really thought much about, but I suppose, in a way, you could be right. You know, the more you're playing these, like, new romantic things, the more I'm realising that there is actually some similarity between that sort of stuff and the stuff that I'm doing. I'm not going to think about it too hard, though, because might fall over.
Yeah. Let's hear one more track, and then we'll let everyone know where they can see it. This is my second favourite song on the album.
Right.
After I like I'm Japanese Best. This is... if I was to make a list, this would be two. And this is called Grey. Oh,
waiting for a 1930s train on a suitcase in the rain. I fade into the distance and fade back again. Leaning in a darkened underpass with a robot made of glass. In a pinstripe suit, a hero hat, and a David Niven Tash. Purple and green, they're 270s for me. Yellow and red,
well, I just wouldn't be seen dead.
The only color that's any good is gray. Sitting in a Rolls Royce by the wharf with my chauffeur, he's a dwarf. He looked at me with his cold grey eyes and said,
"Gary, get those multicoloured clothes off."
Black and white, well, they're just not right. The former too dark and the latter too light. The only colour that's any cop is grey. The only things I like are grey. Androids, answer phones, and Polaroids of clay. Old ladies in a French cafe. Concrete slabs in Haringey, all painted grey. I only like grey. Well, I suppose silver's okay.
That was Visage, Fade to Grey. We're coming out of early because I've had enough of it, to be honest. And but before that, we were talking to Gary Lestrange.
Hello.
Hello.
Again.
And I'm just going to... thanks for coming in, and it was great hearing all those
tracks.
Thank you. But the best of luck with it. Now, if you're out and about in the world, people who are listening, if you're on the internet or wherever you are, you're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. But you can go and see Gary Lestrange live at the Underbelly in Edinburgh during the festival this summer from July the 31st to August the 21st at 11:20 p.m.
24th, sorry.
And the 24th, yeah, sorry, from the 31st of August to 24th. 11:20 p.m, so it'll be kind of late night, moody...
I'm hoping to, get a lot of people in at that time when they're sick of drinking.
I have a friend who's psychic, and she's performed at the Underbelly, and she is, you know, it's a former, like, charnel house. It's loads of dead people were buried there, and
right.
She found the gigs very difficult to do because before she went on, the faces of the dead would be surrounding her and pestering her,
and she found
it very stressful. But if you're not tuned in like that, you should be all right.
Well, I hope not.
Yeah.
I'll have to leave my aerials at home, I suppose.
I think so, yeah. So, and you can also find Gary on the World Wide Web net at www.garylestrange.co.uk. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you, Stuart. It's been a pleasure.
I need to get this programme back on track now before Resonance FM loses its right to broadcast by not fulfilling its remit. So here's a track from a new album by the Japanese band Melt Banana. This is out now, and this one is great, and it's called If It Is the Deep Sea, I Can See You There.
Shame! 2003. Post-millennial electronica on Resonance 104.4 FM.
I
That was, I'll tell you what that was in a bit, because it will lead into the next thing better. Anyway, at the start of that little run of three things was Melt Banana from their new album Cellscape, and that was called If It Is the Deep Sea, I Can See You Here. After that, Sonny Rollins from Plus Four, which was recorded in 1956 with Match Rokes on the drums, and that was called Count Your Blessings. Then an advert came in, and then after that was I Don't Believe Him, Donna, by Lenny Miles, and we've played that because our last guest here on One Way Single Parent Family Favourites on Resonance 104.4 FM, which you can also get on the internet if you live outside a 5 mile radius of central London, is Lucy Porter, who's a comedian. Hello.
Hello.
You alright?
I'm very well, thank you. You? Did you have a nice weekend and stuff?
Yeah, I did actually.
Thank you.
I can't remember what I did though. I said yeah. I took a toddler around the Natural History Museum.
That's fun.
Well, they like dinosaurs, don't they?
Yeah, I know. Well, I've got a six-year-old, and he's... Well, I haven't got a six-year-old. I've got a six-year-old nephew, and he loves it. They ask, like, questions, though, which I find really, you know, annoying, because I don't know anything about anything, and you just see loads of other kind of, like, parents and carers and stuff looking completely baffled and just kind of making stuff up.
I know. I had to do that, because he asked... he was looking at this... he asked what cells were, and he's only four. And I thought, well, he doesn't... If I tell him that his body is composed of millions upon millions of tiny individual items that all contain in them a replica of the DNA needed to reconstruct him elsewhere, that could be really... He's just about coping with Father Christmas and stuff. That could be really
Then you'd
bad.
Have to get onto cancer and stuff like that,
I know,
and it would just
nightmare.
All be yeah. terrible, yeah.
But I Don't Believe Him, Donna... That's about lying.
It's not a great record, I don't think, but it's quite nice because it's one of the only records that I've ever heard where the backing singers are kind of arguing with the main singer. I just think that's quite an interesting sort of little device.
What are they doing? I didn't notice that.
Well, he's basically saying, oh, I love you, you're brilliant, Donna. And they're all going, no, shut up. He's completely a liar. He told me the same thing too. Or he told us the same thing too, I think they say, which is like weird that they're all sort of his exes arranged in the studio as his backing singers, but...
When I was a younger man, I used to think if I died, I wanted at my funeral there to be a motorcycle display team of people I'd gone out with, all piled up on each other's shoulders. That'd be good. Maybe that's what Lenny Miles was thinking. He wanted to get them all in a room to sort it out. But you're doing a show about lying, are you?
I am doing a show basically about lying, yes.
Is that in it?
No, because I was trying to think, because I sort of need sort of playing music, and I was sort of having a little look. It was quite good coming here today because it made me sort of look through my record collection.
Oh, I'm glad it was some use.
And it's been useful already, no matter what else happens, even if it goes horribly wrong now, it's been great. But something to think about is songs about lying, and I'm kind of drawing a bit of a blank at the moment.
So you're doing, is it an hour of stand-up about lies, or... Is that just a thing that you have to put at the start because it's about your fifth show and you need to make it sound different to the others?
Yeah, it's kind of a peg to sort of desperately kind of crowbar in the material that I've been doing in the clubs for the last year, in many ways. But yeah, the theme is kind of great. It's got a sort of thematic strength to it that I think my normal set doesn't, because I think an hour of stand-up is just a lot. So if you've got something where you can just, you know, the audience can at least know that you've got sort of, you know, you say at the beginning, I've got sort of 10 things I'm going to cover, and then they, you know, if they're hating it by the time you've got to eight, then at least they
go. They might not believe you though if they know it's about lies.
That's very true. I know. It's lies within lies, and there are lies in the show, and there's, you know.
Do you tell the truth on stage as stand-up about your life, or do
you
lie?
This is the whole point, actually, why I started doing it, because I just thought I was really untruthful and had all those... Because you know when you see stand-ups, right, and you've done the circuit and things, and, you know, and there's sort of the conventions that everybody talks about smoking dope, and then, and you sort of are in the dressing room with them afterwards, and they don't smoke dope, and they're kind of like Christians and very clean living or whatever. You get, like, blokes who sort of say, oh, I'm really lonely and I'm really sad, and, you know, loads of blokes go on and say, oh, I'm single, and they're married, and but they're shagging around or whatever.
Yeah, that's partly why I did it all the time for 10 years, and the last 2 years I haven't done a lot of gigs, and it's partly because I had the persona of being annoyed or depressed, and I became quite happy in my life, and then felt that I couldn't really do it.
Yeah,
couldn't really sort of fake it, and I hadn't worked out. For example, that bloke was just in, Gary Lestrange. Yeah. That's not a real person. That's a bloke called Wayne Shepherd pretending. He wouldn't mind. He wouldn't be annoyed if you... So he can, like, step into that. But unless you've got, like, a really strong persona, you get caught up in it, don't you?
Well, yeah, if your persona is just an extension of yourself, you do... Because I found myself, like, things like... And it's just stupid little things, but, like, you know, I had this gag where I'd always end the show by going, oh, anyway, so I'm off to a club now, and then I had some... rubbish little gag about going out clubbing, and then it was just always really awful because people would sort of come up to me and just go, oh, what club are you going to? And then there's just that moment where you sort of go, well, I could just say a club and then that would be an easy conversation, or I could say, look, what you don't understand about stand-up seemingly is that you know, like, I think audiences kind of know to an extent that it's all rubbish because obviously jokes are lies essentially, because, you know, but
jokes,
but
they, are lies. Jokes,
it's all lies. Yeah. But they still kind of believe bits within yourself. I think it's really, because I used to have a thing as well about my mum being from Sicily, right? And she's technically not from Sicily, she's from a place called Coventry, right. Which isn't that similar.
Yeah, yeah.
And people would kind of, you know, come up and go, you know, and sort of say, oh, you know, so your mum's Sicilian. And that kind of made me feel really awful, because that is me basically just standing on stage and saying something that people go, oh my God, I've got Sicilian relatives, and oh, I can have a chat with her about that. And then you sort of just feel really rubbish having to say, because once you've said that to an audience member, once they say, oh, you know, where's your mum from in Sicily, and you go, actually, she's not, then the whole thing kind of falls apart.
A terrible thing happened to me in Newcastle, where I used to do this bit about hating children and not wanting to ever have babies, right? I didn't really have an opinion about it, but it was just seemed funny to say that, because people kind of get upset because people like children, and if you say you really don't like them, they kind of... And, you know, from whence the humour arose, obviously, like, you know. And then at the end of it, once in Newcastle, this woman came up to me and she went, I really like that bit you did about hating babies. And I went, oh, thanks. And she went, I hate babies as well.
Oh.
And I went, I don't really hate babies. It's just a joke, you know. It's just. And she went, no, I really hate them. It's good to hear someone saying it. And I went, yeah, well, you know, it's just something that doesn't mean anything. And she went, in fact, I hate them so much that I've been sterilised so that I can never conceive. And because I had been sectioned earlier on in my life, I had to get a special dispensation to be allowed to do that. And it was really great hearing someone articulate my feelings of disgust for children.
No,
I was going,
way.
Oh, well, it was only a joke, you know. And then I thought, well, you have to be careful, don't you, what you put out into the world.
Yeah. Well, it's like Al Murray, like, you know, I've seen Al Murray doing the Pub Landlord, and then people come up afterwards and they go, yeah, I hate the French as well.
I know, my dad did that, actually. I took my dad to see him, and my dad, Al Murray does this act where he pretends to be a sort of racist pub landlord and slags off all people from different countries all through the way through it. And at the end, my dad went, he was right, especially about the Welsh. But you know what? The only thing I didn't agree with him was he made fun of Jesus at one point, and that's not on. It's so bent, their logic of those people. Anyway, there you are. But so, are you expecting people to pick you up afterwards and go, not literally pick you up, but
they could.
You look small. Will they pick you up on details? Are you inviting cross-examination?
Well, yeah, there's I've tried to sort of put a couple of things in the show that, you know, that should be, they're almost like magic, really, but in stand-up form, where it's kind of like, I will do something and then something will happen later on, and it's sort of, there are sort of logic gaps and there are sort of things like that where I kind of hope that people will notice. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of stand-up gigs, you think, probably not. I think in Edinburgh show you get more of those sort of people who are actually
that's more switched on.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, you know, a lot of gigs you turn up and, you know, you just talk about sex and drinking and that's all they want to hear or whatever. But,
where are you on, though?
I went at the Underbelly, haunted venue,
right,
which
time?
I didn't know about. 10 o'clock.
Yeah, and it's true about those ghosts, you know. You know Janie Godley, do you know
that? Yeah. She about there again, though?
Oh, right. Well, she's got... She either has or thinks she's got psychic powers.
Yeah, no, she's read me.
Actually. It really freaked me out.
Was it good? And
well, it was true, which is interesting, because you're talking about lies. She came up with a lot, and she keeps emailing me about once a month with just predictions for my future, and then they come true. But one that she gave me about a month ago was that I'm going to fall over on a beach and break my leg.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and I normally dismiss what she said. I'm not interested in that. But then it does come true. But I had to go to South Shields recently, and I didn't. I walked along the harbour bit, but I wouldn't go on the beach because I was frightened that I'd break my leg. But if she says it's going to happen and talks to dead people at the Underbelly venue in Edinburgh, it's going to happen, isn't it?
It's worth not going to the beach for one summer, isn't it, I think?
But, I mean, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm going to be on a beach, whether I like it or not.
Well, you'll be caught in some, there'll be some sand nearby or something, or I don't know. Or you'll slip on a copy of The Beach by Alex Garland.
Could be that.
That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. But, I mean, she's scared of the... You're not scared of the ghosts at the underbelly, though, are you?
Well, not really. Well, I have absolutely no psychic tendencies. So I went to stay in a house in... it's in Sussex, and it's like Anne of Cleves' house or something.
Right.
And I was with my friend Wendy, who is a little bit sort of psychic like that, and a dog, her dog, Boo. And the dog went absolutely mental. And there was just like... We were just been down the pub, and then we came back just sitting around. The dog went absolutely mental. Nothing was going on. And Wendy got, like, really freaked out, and there was obviously something there. And I was completely... I mean, I was slightly drunk, but I think, anyway, I'm just completely oblivious to that sort of thing.
I'd take that dog to the underbelly venue in Edinburgh with me, like a canary.
Yeah.
Like mine is having a canary, having a ghost dog.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's play another song about lies. And this is Big... Have you ever seen Big Star? Did you see him when they got back together?
No.
It was very exciting.
I would very much like to.
Anyway, this is Big Star, and it's called Don't Lie to Me.
Yeah.
Right, so back there we had the first track in that, which was Big Star from number one record, Don't Lie to Me. And then a bit of John Zorn's Masada, and you can see John Zorn. And you can see John. It's really funny when you're doing radio and you start to say radio things, you become really self-conscious. And you can see John Zorn 2 weeks today at the Barbican with the Masada Quartet. But I actually saw John Zorn more recently than that, because I was in New York. And I went in a jazz record shop, and John Zorn, who is a New York jazz musician, came in and bought some records. And that is the most New York jazz thing that can possibly happen to you in your life. And after that, Blind Lemon Jefferson and a bit of, what was that? Jack of Diamonds Blues. But he wasn't a lemon. He was blind, but he wasn't a lemon. He lied. And Lucy Porter's here talking about, she's doing a stand-up show themed around lies. But that's not all you do, is it?
It's not all I do.
What else are you up to at the moment?
I've been doing some bits of writing of things, and very excitingly next week I'm doing a stand-up gig for an advertising agency for their client is Persil.
Do you have to do stuff about Persil?
I want to do 15 minutes of... so I've got to write 15 minutes of stand-up about kind of what it's like doing your washing. Which is kind of just like such a weird little thing to do. But I think it might actually be quite good. You know, when you just think that sort of, it will concentrate my mind on something other than my Edinburgh show, which is a good thing. And, you know, and if I ever find myself in a room full of kind of embittered housewives who with chapped raw fingers, I'll know the kind of material to pluck out and please them. But it is, I mean, you know, strange.
I only ever did one. I did one corporate gig about 13 years ago for, IBM or something, mm-hmm. on a boat, and I haven't so much got an ethical objection to them as just the fact that when you're playing to like people that all have a common interest, they're like a really small, like a normal audience, are all mixed up and they all go for different things. But those gigs, or sometimes when you do charity gigs and they're all supporters of a particular cause, they're really odd because they're not like a normal cross section of people.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
what do you think the Purcell people will be like?
Oh, well, I have no idea. I think it's just mainly going to be sort of people from the company, so I'm sure they'll sit there stony-faced but nodding, going, yeah, we can use that. Yeah, that's very funny. Actually, yeah, that's very funny, because I've done... I did this awful... Went for a meeting in this advertising agency where they had, like, the sort of meeting room that they took me into was, like, the walls were all made out of sort of blackboard, done with blackboard paint, so that they could, when they were brainstorming, they could write things up, and it was just, like, all the walls were covered with things, just words, random words, like, inspiration! You know, and it was just an awful, awful environment, and because I've done like corporate gigs for advertising agencies before, and they are just, I hate to generalise, but quite often just very loathsome.
Yeah,
people.
Well, and thieves, really. I mean, how many times do you just see something in an advert and you just think, I know exactly where that was stolen
God,
from,
I know.
And the person got no money for it.
I know. Well, like stand-ups, you know, like Milton Jones, I know, has had stuff nicked from, you know, by advertising people, because you know. Because I had some last year in Edinburgh, some like advertising people wanted to come in and see my show, and they phoned up like my PR person and said, oh, can we come and see the show? Can we get on the guest list? And you think of all the, like, you work in advertising, the most kind of like wasteful. Yeah, absolutely. It really drives me mad.
I used to do this bit, right, where I talked for about 15 minutes about a picture of a dog and a cat sitting at a piano. And someone from Cadbury's said, would you do that in an advert? And I went, well, no. And anyway, it wouldn't work because it's really long. And they went, well, yeah, but that's just... And I had to go... I went to this room in Soho and got paid. Got paid 500 quid when I was 22 to perform this 15-minute routine to some people in an office who were all sitting in chairs. And, of course, it just seemed like the most boring thing in the world. And obviously, and then I could all see them looking at the woman who'd got me to go in. And they were kind of going... like she was an idiot, yeah. You know, and I could have just told them it wasn't going to...
Yeah.
I don't know, anyway. That was the only bit of advertising work I ever did, which was in a room for people that... I just knew it wasn't going to work. Bizarre thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that theft thing, I mean, I know Al Murray got asked, I think, to basically audition to do a beer advert, and it was just his stuff when he got there.
Wow. We're giving you the opportunity to perform your own material. It's like that one for toilet rolls where it's like obviously the woman from Keeping Up Appearances.
Yeah.
And they've just employed someone who looks a bit like Patricia Routledge. Or, you know, I mean,
that's disgusting, isn't it?
Well, it is in any other sort of field. Yeah. You know, if you just, like, I mean, in music, you can't just cover someone's song without, you know.
And there's also that one where you get those people from Men Behaving Badly and they're walking around a DIY shop and they've basically got exactly the same relationship as they had in Men Behaving Badly, which presumably was invented by the writer, except they're calling each other by their real actor and actress names. It's just car merchants. Will you be touching on any of that in your Lies show?
Well, yeah, a bit. There's a bit of stuff about advertising in there. And the thing is, though, like, it's such a massive subject, and you do sort of, because I started writing it, and I thought, well, you know, you've got to do, like, some political stuff, and I'm not really a kind of, you know, my act generally isn't very political. I mean, I write sort of satirical stuff for other people, but, you know, and there is, but, I mean, most of what I do is kind of quite a little, sort of small little anecdotes about, I'm quite sort of introverted and indeed possibly self-obsessed, so a lot of it is just about like me and my family, so that kind of I'm still sort of, well, basically writing the show. I've got a preview tomorrow night in Soho.
Where
is it? The Amused Moose at Barcode on Archer Street in Soho, in
what
the
time?
Little downstairs bar. I think I'm on at 10 o'clock, but before me there is lovely Carey Marks, who's going to be on about, I think he's on about 8, and then Andrew Clover, who's doing Super Cub, is the name of his show, and he's doing that at 9, and then I think I'm on about 10, although they'll probably overrun, so I'll be on at, like, you know, 10:30 when everyone's very drunk.
And where's the Edinburgh show? Where's the Edinburgh show again?
The Edinburgh show is the Underbelly.
Haunted Underbelly.
Yeah, the Haunted Underbelly at 10 o'clock from, like, the, I think it's like 31st of July, isn't it, until the 20th, till I collapse.
Till you've had enough.
At the end of August and never want to do stand-up again.
All right, let's have another bit of lie-based music. This is something from Luscious Jackson.
Love to be better.
Right, that's Luscious Jackson, and that's from the album called Fever In, Fever Out, and it's Why Do I Lie? And it's the last of a trilogy of lie-based records that we played in honour of Lucy Porter, the comedian who's doing a show about... What's it called?
Live at the Underbelly, because when I had to decide lies. What it was called, I didn't know what it was going to be about.
It's going to be about lies anyway.
It's about lies.
Okay, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Also today we talked to Rick Bland, who's doing Thick at the Canadian Embassy and at Jongleurs too during the summer at the festival if you go up, and Gary Lestrange, who's really is Wayne Shepherd, he's a normal bloke, and he's on at the Underbelly in the summer as well. And coming up next on is Calling All Pensioners, which is a great show to segue into. I've been Stuart Lee. I don't know when I'll be back, sometime in the summer. And next week it's Pete Sargent or someone at midday here on One Way Single Parent Families on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm going to leave you with this track because I'm going to France tomorrow. And this is Serge Gainsbourg, and it's called Bonnie and Clyde. Bye.
L'histoire de Jesse James. Comment il vécu? Comment il est mort? Ça vous a plu, hein? Vous en demandez encore? Eh bien, écoutez l'histoire de Bonnie and Clyde. Alors voilà, Clyde a une petite amie. Elle est belle et son prénom c'est
Bonnie.
À eux deux ils forment le gang Barrow. Leur nom
Bonnie Parker
et Clyde Barrow.
Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde. Moi lorsque j'ai connu Clyde autrefois, c'était un gars loyal, honnête et droit.
Il faut croire que c'est la société qui m'a définitivement abîmé.
Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde.
Qu'est-ce qu'on n'a pas écrit sur elle et moi?
On prétend que nous tuons de sang-froid.
C'est pas drôle, mais on est bien obligé
de faire taire celui qui se met à gueuler. Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde.
Chaque fois qu'un policeman se fait buter,
un garage ou une banque se fait braquer,
pour la police ça ne fait pas de mystère.
C'est signé
Clyde Barrow,
Bonnie Parker, Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde.
Maintenant chaque fois qu'on essaie de se ranger,
de s'installer tranquille dans un meublé,
dans les trois jours voilà le tac tac tac,
des mitraillettes qui reviennent à l'attaque. Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde.
Un de ces quatre tomberont ensemble. Moi je m'en fous, c'est pour Bonnie que je tremble.
Quelle importance qu'il me fasse la peau. Moi Bonnie je tremble pour Clyde Barrow. Bonnie and Clyde.